Hello and you're welcome to this week's, We're Scumming GA Memories. And this week we're on about two games, two comic finals between Roscommon and, Sligo. And to take us through those, we have, as always, Ray Lennon. Hello Ray, how are you?
Hello Aidan, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Yeah, cool. So, That was two very good clashes, and of course two very good Sligo teams and two very good Roscommon teams on both occasions. So could you tell us a bit more about those?
I will, Aidan. And the two Roscommon have played Sligo on two occasions since the GAA was founded in Connacht Finals. One was that great victory 10 years ago, 2010, where Fergal O'Donnell masterminded one of the best Connacht Final victories for Roscommon of all time. Because, Aidan, in 2010, we were after getting relegated to Division 4 after a poor league campaign, and Sligo had beaten us by 7 points in the last league match. So Roscommon went into that championship with low expectations, and those are the sweet victories when nobody expects the team to come good, but they did, and they turned out 14 points to 13 victory winners over Mayo, over Sligo rather, in Castlebar in County Mayo 10 years ago this year. But the first game I was going to focus on was the 1947 Connacht final between Roscommon and Sligo, Aidan. And that took place in Ballina, of all places, would you believe, on the 20th of July 1947. And that was the first ever Connacht final played in Ballina, James Stephens Park, home of Ballina Stephenites, All-Ireland club champions in 2005. Of course, Ballina, home to Liam McHale, David Brady, Ger Brady, all those great players. Kevin McStay, of course, played for Ballina Stephenites for many years. He's a native of Ballina, and his brother Paul, great footballer as well, Kevin, and manager for Roscommon and St. Bridget's, of course, in Foyles before that. Roscommon minor team. But anyway, Roscommon won the game, Aidan. 14,000 people were at it. It was a dreadfully wet day. They talked about the torrential rain and wind. And the writer in the newspaper talked about all of the people that came to the game on bicycles, how wet they would be. And I suppose in this remove, we take it for granted. We've planes, trains, cars, automobiles to get us to matches all over Ireland, New York, London now, where Roscommon play. In those days, people relied on the bicycle a lot. I know maybe people didn't travel from Roscommon to Ballina on the bicycle, but they travel at long distances on the bicycle to games. You know, 10, 15 miles wouldn't be a big journey on a bike in those days, like, you know. And you think about the luxuries we have today, like, take my own father now, he cycled 10 miles into Longford town every morning for school, you know. It's unreal back in the 50s, you know, the people, the hardships they had. And for them it wasn't hardship at all. They were fit, they were strong, they were doing physical work out in the farms, so they were quite happy to do that, you know. It was no problem. But the papers talked about all the bicycles lined up and how the people were getting very wet on their journey home from the match, and of course on their journey to it. But 1947, Aidan, was a special year in the GAA, because, and all the newspapers talk about the trip to America for the All-Ireland final. That was the year the Polo Grounds final in New York. And Roscommon winning the Connacht final put them into a great position to qualify for the Polo Grounds All-Ireland in New York. But unfortunately, they won the Connacht final but lost to Cavan in the semi-final. We'll talk about that in a moment. So the trip to New York was front and centre for the players, the management, the fans, of course, and the journalists.
But it would have been a huge thing back then, wouldn't it, really, to be going to New York for a game?
Wouldn't it be lovely if we were even talking about now Roscommon and Kerry and All-Ireland final in New York? We're all talking about the great game that Cavan played against Kerry, John Joe Ryan, and all of that in the Polo Grounds. It could have been Roscommon. I think Roscommon were favourites for the semi-final against Cavan. They beat Sligo by 212-108 in the Connacht final, and then on the 3rd of August 1947, Roscommon lost to Cavan by 2-4 to 6 points in Croke Park in what was a little bit of an upset, because Roscommon were, you know, had beaten Cavan in the All-Ireland final in 1943, and Roscommon and Kerry were the two best teams in the country at the time. So Cavan, albeit they were a strong team and a force in that era, Roscommon, I think, were still the favourites in 1947 to beat them in the All-Ireland semi-final, Aidan. And you know what, Aidan? You talk about Ulster championships. You think today, in the last 25, 30 years, you talk about Donegal, Tyrone, Armagh being the main teams winning Ulster championships, and they have been in that era. But if you look at it, Cavan have the most Ulster titles. They have 39 Ulster titles. And the next in line, I think, is Tyrone with 18, Monaghan with 18, Tyrone with 17, Armagh only have maybe 12 or 13, you know, and Donegal have 7 or 8. So, like, Cavan are still, like, way out in front of any of those teams. Like, 39 they have. And between 1931 and 1955, there was something like 25 Ulster Championships contested. 25. And I think Cavan won 20 or 21 of them. Like, in that era.
And remember the 2 years that they did the two in a row. Would there have been many players involved in that team that year, those 2 years to the kind of final against Sligo that year?
There was, Aidan, and the Roscommon team was G. Dolan, and Gerry Dolan was in goals. Now, he was in goals in the final in 46, and I think he was in the final in 44 as well. Owen Zihore was in the goals in 43, if I'm not mistaken, or Owen Zihore could have been in the goals in 44. But Jack Casterly was full back in 47. He was on the 43-44 team. Bill Jackson was still there. Brendan Lynch, Bill Carless, Eamon Boland, Phelan and Jimmy Murray, Donal Keenan, Jack McQuillan, and John Nerney. So Roscommon still had, there's 10 or 11 of the team that played in 44.
I just thought that would be an interesting thing to ask, you know, because it's interesting when you're comparing teams from, we say, winning a two in a row to that year, you know, would have been just, you know, interesting to compare would there have been many players left from.
It was largely the same team, Aidan. Like, if you look at it, Jack Casterly, Bill Jackson, Brendan Lynch, Bill Carless, Eamon Boland, Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, Donal Keenan, John Joe Fallon, Jack McQuillan, John Joe Nerney. They were all there nearly in 44, most of them. You know, there was still the Roscommon team of 43 and 44, really. There was a few players gone. Like, Owen Zihore wasn't on the team in 47. Liam Gilmartin, he played midfield in 43 and 44. He wasn't on the team that time either. I think he got TB or he got ill, he got sick. Now, it could be open to correction, but I've heard from a reliable source that he got sick in 47, that he had an illness. And, of course, in that era, Aidan, if we mustn't forget that TB was like what COVID-19 is today. TB
was rampant.
It was endemic. Whole families were wiped out of TB. I know a friend of mine from Donegal, who died last year, his name was Donal Noon, and Donal lived till the age of 94, but he had spent, I'd say, 5 or 6 years in sanatoria, and he spent a lot of time in Castlereagh in the sanatorium. That was a TB sanatorium. For people sick with the TB, where they were in quarantine. And Donal didn't go to college or university, but he said that was his university because they did so much learning, they did so much plays, quizzes, drama, writing, so much in the area of entertainment. He spent 4 years in the sanatoria in Killybegs and in Castlereagh that he learned so much. It was like being in college, and like the people that were there, they were brilliant people. So they had school and an education. So it was like a third level for him, but it was very sad. A lot of people died. As I said, whole families were wiped out. Thank God people recovered from it. And then Noel Brown, he became Minister for Health in 1951, and he built the sanatoria and started bringing in an eradication scheme. But TB was in the 40s what even worse than COVID-19 is today. There was no cure for it, and even it stayed in, people say it stayed in the walls of houses, like it was a very very deadly disease. So consumption, so that's the era we're looking at, and hard times for the people. 1947 also was the year of the big snow, you know, the snow stayed on the ground right until May. It was high, there was sort of 10 foot of snow in certain places, Aidan, you know, and speaking to the older people, they said it was very very high, the snow, and stayed a long time, but it wasn't as cold. You remember, we're talking about Roscommon winning in 2010 in that kind of championship. And you remember, we had the big freeze in 2010. You remember in Christmas time?
Oh, I remember.
The -20. So the big snow in 1947, Roscommon and Sligo playing the Connacht final. And we had the big freeze in 2010. And here we go, Roscommon and Sligo played in the Connacht final. So if the next time we have a big winter of snow or ice, watch out, it could be a Roscommon and Sligo kind of final, and hopefully Roscommon might win it again, you know. But so there was the Roscommon team. But the game itself, Aidan, Roscommon won 2-12 to 1-8, and it was, by all accounts, it was a one-sided game in that Roscommon led by 1-6 to 1-1 at half time. They got a goal after 2 minutes. Jack McQuillan scored it. He was full forward. Jack McQuillan became an independent TD later on, or he became a TD. I don't know whether he was independent or he was with a party, but he was certainly a TD. I think he was from down in the Pádraig Pearse's club, or what we have, Tuck McConnell, or down that country more. But Jack McQuillan was a star player for Roscommon in the '40s, full forward. He got the goal. And then, would you believe this, Aidan? Roscommon got the goal, and a couple of minutes later, Sligo went up the field, and a man was fouled, and they got a penalty, and Frank White scored a penalty for Sligo. So it was 1-1. You know, it was 1-1 within a very short space of time. But then Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray's brother from Knockrockery, the St. Patrick's Club, as it would have been called at the time, he scored 5 points for Roscommon, and of course himself and Jimmy were rampant. The paper said the Sligo were hopelessly outplayed at this juncture, and they got a point to Sligo to make it 1-6 to 1-1 at the break, and that the Sligo goalkeeper, who was B. Wickham, I think Brendan Wickham, Brendan Wickham, he made 3 fantastic saves. He was really the hero for Sligo in the first half, that he kept Sligo in the game with these saves. But they said that Roscommon had masterful play by Culhane and Boland in the middle of the field, and they reached to the clouds for balls, and the master craftsman Jimmy Murray never let a chance go a begging. So we'll talk about Eamon Boland was midfield, but Mick Culhane was the other midfielder in. I'll talk about Mick Culhane in a moment, because there's a whole story there as well about Mick Culhane. And Sligo were beaten at half time according to the papers, and that Jimmy Murray was rampant. He was centre forward, and that Tom Dunleavy was the centre back, and he found it very difficult. So Roscommon were superior in every department. Phelan Murray got the freeze. So there was more than any other part of the team, the paper said, the key to the Roscommon success was the defence. Roscommon's defence, where Boyd, Casserly, Jackson, Lynch, Carless and Collins formed a double phalanx of powerfully built men, sure and deadly in breaking up raids. And there was never more in evidence than on Sunday last. Now, I looked up the word phalanx, and phalanx is like, do you know when you see the police in formation, Aidan, like in a riot squad, you know, there's a row ahead.
Oh, yeah.
That's a phalanx. Yeah. They're in rows. So he says there were a double phalanx of defenders. Like, it's like a row of troops, a row of police officers, and it comes from the Greek word for phalanx, for formation. So that's what the newspapers call it. Just the language they were using, that Roscommon were so strong that they were, he referred to them in that phraseology, you know. So, so the second half of the game, Aidan, Roscommon pulled away after half time, and they said that Mick Culhane was a wizard at midfield play, and he set up movements, opened up movements, and leading forays into the Sligo goal area. And not alone did he command play in this vital sector, but he invariably went off on total hand solo runs to place the forwards, who had taken up good advantageous positions to receive his hand passes. So, like, Mick Culhane was the man of the match. Like, he played very, very well in the middle of the field. As I said, they called him a wizard at midfield. Now, the Irish Independent said the Sligo were unlucky. Sligo were lucky that the margin wasn't greater, and the Irish press said it was a Roscommon cakewalk to easy victory. So the second half of the game, Aidan, Jimmy Murray, Phelan Murray, Donald Keenan were to the fore. Just after half time, the breaking ball at midfield, Roscommon weren't winning at all. The rain got very heavy in the second half, and the wind as well. So in the second half, Roscommon got another goal. Jack McQuillan got it again. So he got 2 goals. Jimmy Murray got 2 points. Donald Keenan got a point as well. And in the last 10 minutes, Sligo scored 5 points in a row in the last 10 minutes to put some respectability on it. But by all accounts, Roscommon were the superior team, apart from the last 10 minutes. So the paper said as well that Roscommon were superior in every department. They outclassed Sligo. They were faster. They were cleverer in general play, with great understanding. There were lightning speed, and McQuillan's goal after a few minutes in the second half made them unbeatable. Culhane and Boland at midfield were the foundation stone of the victory, and Jimmy Murray, of course, as well. So Roscommon, dominant. John Ginnerney, in fact, it was John Ginnerney who got the second goal. I apologise. John Ginnerney got the goal in the second half, Aidan. But 14,000 people were at the game. The paper talks about Connacht Council having a meeting after the game to congratulate Ballina for hosting it. And Ballina spent £1,000 at the time, an awful lot of money. They spent an awful lot of time and money to fix up their stadium for the first ever Connacht final in Ballina.
And has there ever been any Connacht matches in Ballina since then, I wonder?
I'll have to check it in. I don't know, but it's interesting. Yeah, but Mayo down the years, like Charlestown used to host a lot of matches. I remember being at league matches in Charlestown. You know, Charlestown's a fine stadium as well. But it seems like they might play an odd league match in Ballina, but Castlebar, I'd say, is the main one now at the moment. Like, and but I'll give you Mick Culhane, Aidan. He's an interesting character. He played midfield for Roscommon. He got man of the match. Mick Culhane was born in Glynn in County Limerick. He was a Limerick man. And he was born in the early 1920s. He joined the Guards in 1946. And he played for Dublin in 1946. He's with the Geraldines Club in Dublin. And he played inter-county football with Dublin in 1946.
That's an interesting one, isn't it?
And then at the end of 46, he was transferred from the Guards down to Roscommon. And it must have been to Castlereagh because he joined the Tarman Club in Castlereagh. Now, Tarman's just outside Castlereagh, as you know. And Dan O'Rourke, the famous president of the GA, was from the Tarman Club. So Tarman was a famous club in Roscommon back in the years gone by. You know, but back, say, 50 years ago, like the football and club landscape was totally different nearly in Roscommon. You know, you had teams like Tarman. You had teams like St. Barry's Rooski, which is now St. Barry's and Kilglass Gaels. You had Aerog, or Michael Glavies was just the one club at that time. Tarman was there. Kiltoom was a club before Bridget's, I think they were called Kiltoom. You know, so there was different. St. Patrick's was the team in Arcrockery before St. Dominic's. So there was different teams back in the 40s and 50s. And of course, I think in Roscommon as well, you had a club called St. Coleman's, Aidan, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
So the football and landscape in Roscommon, if you're looking at it 50, 60, 70 years ago, was a different landscape. And then you had amalgamations and you had breakups. Like Killina was a team in Tulsk of their own right, and a very good team as well, you know. So
goes to show you how things have changed over the years. But yeah. I was just thinking there as well, Ray, imagine if the All-Stars were out back then. It would have been awful hard to pick an All-Star team when you consider not just in Roscommon. Well, Roscommon, you know, 1943-44 and that year, you know, that year as well, but also around the country as well. All the really excellent players around the country it would have been very tough to pick an All-Star team that year.
It would indeed, but I'd say Aidan in the 40s, I'd say Roscommon, 43, 44, 46, 47, I'd say Roscommon probably a 7 or 8 at least every year, you know, those years, you know. Yeah. You know, the Bill Jacksons, Bill Carless, Liam Gilmartin, Eamon Boland, you know, Mick Culhane would have gone All-Star in 47, Jimmy Murray, Phelan Murray, you know, Jack McQuillan, all those fellas would have got Onesie Hoare. They'd all be getting All-Stars, I'd say. Like, they're all famous players, like, in heroes. And just another thing, Aidan, I was looking at last night, like, Roscommon, like, in the 40s, that's when Roscommon football became, you know, the great county team with the tradition we have. Like, Roscommon had won a couple of kind of finals. They won the first one in 1903, Aidan. And then Roscommon won a kind of final in 1913. And between 1913 and 14, Roscommon didn't win a kind of final for 29 years. Not until 1943. So it was a Galway Mayo monopoly or duopoly. And Sligo Leitrim won one kind of final in 1927 and Sligo won one in 1928. And Roscommon weren't even getting the kind of finals then, you know. They were in maybe one or two in that 29-year period. And then they got to the kind of final in 41 and 42 and Mayo or Galway beat them. And Galway, I think, were beaten in All-Ireland final in 1942 by Dublin. So Roscommon started to come back in. They got to the kind of final in 41 and 42, beaten by Galway. And then they won 43 and 44, 46 and 47. And they were the best team in the country.
That was a golden period for them as well.
Golden period. Like, we were beaten in All-Ireland final after a replay in 46. Kerry got two goals in the last couple of minutes to get a draw in 46. Roscommon were home and dry. And then Kerry got the two goals, you know. So we could have got three All-Irelands. And in 47, who knows, we were favourites to beat Cavan in the semi-final. And Cavan beat Roscommon 2-4 to 6 points. They got two goals, you know, in Croke Park on the 3rd of August, 1947. But Mick Culhane was from Glynn in County Limerick. He joined the Guards, went to Dublin, joined the Geraldines Club, played for Dublin in 1946 Championship. Then in late 46, he was transferred to Roscommon, possibly to Castlereagh, joined the Tarman Club, signed up to Roscommon in 47, was midfield along with Eamon Boland, tremendous player. The paper called him a wizard at midfield. Played for Roscommon until 1950, Aidan, right?
Yeah.
And in 1950, there was a celebration to Hugh Gibbons. I forgot to mention Hugh Gibbons. He was on the 43 and 44 team. He wasn't on the 47 team there. But Mick Kilhan left in 1950. And he left the Guards in. Would you believe that? He left the Guards and he went to America. And he went to Pittsburgh. And he trained to become a dentist. And he became a dentist in Pittsburgh. And there's lots of information online about him being the vice chairman of the North American GA Board, which was set up in 1959. He was the vice chairman.
Total change of career, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yeah. So he became a dentist, lived in Pittsburgh, very much involved in the North American GA Board, or the US GA Board, and particularly the Midwest Board. And he won Midwest Championships. He joined a club in Pittsburgh called Roger Casements. And he played with Roger Casements for many, many years. And then he came back to Ireland, Aidan, in the 80s as a dentist. And he retrained in Ireland to get the qualifications as a dentist in Ireland. And in 1989, he was awarded a Doctor of Dental Surgery in Ireland to go with his Doctor of Dental Surgery from Pittsburgh University in America. And he went back and he lived in Glynn in County Limerick. And probably worked as a dentist, I'm not certain on that, but he certainly qualified in Ireland as a dentist in 1989. He probably would have been in his 60s. And he
highly educated man, so.
Yeah, and he died on the 6th of December in the year 2000 in his home house in Glynn in County Limerick. So that's the famous Mick Kilhan. I'd say Mick Kilhan would have been up in 80 when he died in, I suppose, you know.
That's a good age.
Yeah, I'd say he'd been up in 80. But like, we think about all the great footballers that Scotland had down through the years, like, and we forget that sometimes we have sort of guests to the county that come in and tug out and play for us and perform very well, like Bernie Kine. Was a great footballer, came in from Galway, and he was a teacher, and he played for St. Foyles, and he played midfield for Roscommon in the 1962 All-Ireland Final against Kerry. Bernie Kine, himself and John Stafford Kelly from Elphin, they were a great midfield partnership. So Bernie Kine came from Galway, was a great footballer, did a lot of coaching. I remember when we were playing schoolboys, he was doing a lot of refereeing of matches, you know. I can't remember rightly, I think it was Ballyleague School he taught in. But Bernie Kine, big tall man, his son Ollie played for the Mells in Longford. But he was a great footballer for Roscommon, Bernie Kine, and he played in that 1962 All-Ireland. He came from Galway, and Mick Kilhan came from Limerick, of all places. Came from Glynn in County Limerick, and he starred for Roscommon, Aidan, in the 1947 Connacht Final in Ballina, when Roscommon beat Mayo 2-12-1-8. And he went to America, became a dentist, lived all his life in America, came back in the 80s, trained as a dentist in Ireland, or got the qualifications to become a dentist in Ireland, and then he died on the 6th of December in the year 2000, the famous Mick Kilhan. So a nice, various, a little interesting aspect. And along with Bernie Kine, he was one of two that I know of that came from outside the county to play for Roscommon. It'd be nice to find out if you've any more players that were sort of came, you know, to play for Roscommon. Back in those days, Aidan, a lot of players were Gardaí, you know, and they often played in the county that they were stationed in. You know, there was, you know, the like, for example, in 1957, Aidan, Loud won the All-Ireland Final. And their two midfielders, I think it was Seamus O'Donnell and Kevin O'Neill for Louth, were from Mayo. They were from Mayo. Would you believe that? The last two Mayo men to win All-Ireland senior medals were Seamus O'Donnell and Kevin O'Neill from Mayo, played midfield for Louth in the 1957 All-Ireland Final, and they beat Cork. And that was a shock. Do you remember talking about shocks last week? Louth beating Cork was a shock. Everybody expected Loud to win that game, but Loud won it. And those boys were in midfield, the two Mayo boys. So, like, they were like Larry Tompkins and Shea Fahey. And there was a man from Leitrim, Hubert Reynolds. Hubert Reynolds is from Gortletra in County Leitrim. His nephew would be Seamus Tighe. Seamus Tighe got man of the match nearly in the 1978 Under-21 All-Ireland Final for Roscommon. He's a neighbour of mine. So Seamus was left full-back, he's Kerry. But Hubert Reynolds is from Gortletra in County Leitrim. He was a guard stationed in Louth, and he played midfield for Louth in the All-Ireland Final in 1950 And Mayo beat them in 1950. But Hubert Reynolds was midfield in that team for Lowther. He was one of, he was playing on that team anyway for Lowther. So it just goes to show with the guard, if you're the guardee that or a teacher, you played where you were living. And the Cavan team, Aidan, do you know the Cavan team that beat Roscommon in 47 in the semi-final?
Yeah.
That, like all the great players, like they're recorded in song, like, you know, Simon Degnan, PJ Duke, Mick Higgins, Tony Tighe, the Gunnar Brady, all those famous Cavan players, just like Roscommon, Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, Jack McQuillan, in the 40s for Roscommon. They're famous Cavan team. Peter Donoghue scored a goal against Roscommon in 47 semi-final, and Tony Tighe got the other goal. They're famous players. Like Peter Donoghue got, they called him Babe Ruth in America in the 47 final, the Polo Grounds, the American Press, because he was like Babe Ruth. He scored all the frees. He was just a brilliant free taker. They called him the Babe Ruth of Gaelic football, the American Press, Peter Donoghue. But the player I was getting to on the Cavan team in 1947, the beat Roscommon, Columba McDyer. Columba McDyer was on the Cavan team in 1947, and he was from Glenties in County Donegal, right? I think he was a teacher. He lived in Cavan, and he was the first Donegal man to win an All-Ireland, and he won them with Cavan in 47. And Cavan won the All-Ireland again in 48. They beat Mayo in the final. So Cavan won two in a row that time, and they won again in 52. So Cavan had a very, very strong tradition of football, but Columba McDyer was a Donegal man playing for Cavan in 47. He was from the same town as Jimmy McGuinness, and I think Jimmy McGuinness has a whistle, a famous whistle. I think it's mentioned in different literature that he used for the Donegal training, that when Columba McDyer returned to Glenties, he might have trained Jimmy McGuinness, but he had a whistle Columba McDyer had that he gave to Jimmy McGuinness, and Jimmy McGuinness always used that whistle for his training. I think he lost it on one occasion that he was heartbroken because it was Columba McDyer's whistle, and eventually got it back. He found it or whatever. But little interesting side story there on players from outside of the counties playing for Roscommon, like, you know, and for other counties. We might look into that a little bit more, Aidan, about, you know, players that came in to play for Roscommon in the same way as Mick Culhane did in 47 and in 40.
Isn't it interesting though? Like you know, like the way. You know, Cavan over the years, like it was back in that period the way they were, you know, Cavan did so well, kind of, you know, in Ulster and of course at all Ireland level, and more kind of recently with the potential when you consider that the players that Cavan have had over the last 15 or 20 years, they've never actually pushed on and actually been serious contenders at all Ireland level.
They haven't, Aidan. No, they haven't even been serious contenders in Ulster. You know, they've only been in a couple of Ulster finals. They won in 97.
And they have some wonderful players like that. You know, over the last 20 years, they've had some serious players.
Brilliant. Like, you know, Jason Riley, Larry Riley, Peter Riley, Dermot McCabe, you know, Cian Mackey, you know, Garage McKiernan. They've had some great players, you know, and they haven't, whatever is wrong with the team, maybe belief-wise, but I suppose if you look at Ulster, like Donegal, Armagh, Derry, Tyrone, Down, all those teams have sort of, in the last, say, 40 years, have just passed out Cavan, you know, and like Cavan have even become, you know, if you look at it, Monaghan are way ahead of Cavan now as well, you know.
I think the only team really that haven't done that in serious in the last couple of years, although they've had the potential, is Antrim.
Absolutely, like they've a big population, and would you believe that Antrim were in the All Ireland semi final in 1946. Roscommon played Kerry in the final, but Antrim had won the Ulster final in 46, and Cavan beat them in the Ulster final in 47. And Antrim, I don't think have won an Ulster championship since 1951. So like with the population, like and the thing is, Ulster teams like in Belfast and Antrim, they've won All Ireland club titles like St John's and St Gall's. You know, they've a lot of good club teams. But
do you know another sad thing? I don't know if you've seen recent pictures of it, but you know Casement Park in Belfast, to see it have gone down because it was a fine stadium. I remember seeing hurling matches and Gaelic matches played on it, and it used to be a fine place to play a game, and now it's just overgrown. And of course they have proposals that they're going to kind of do it up again into a stadium again. Wouldn't that be lovely to kind of bring it back to fruition again?
Oh, it would, Aidan, and Casement Park is, like, it's the home of Antrim, and like, I remember, like yourself, being up at matches in Roscommon, played Antrim in 97 and in 98 in the league, and 99 rather, in the league, and I was up at all them games. Roscommon won all those matches, and but Antrim, for the population size of the county, it's a shame that they haven't been stronger in Ulster, like you'd think they would be. But Casement Park, there was sort of controversy, like the money is supposed to be there for it, to do that stadium up, but I think there was something up with the planning, or there was objections to it and whatnot, so well, then again, Northern Ireland government were off for 2 or 3 years as well, everything got lost, so I think it's coming back. I think they're going to build it, but it needs to be done. Like Ulster, Casement Park, such a great stadium, and it would be a shame to see it, you know, left idle, left in a state of dereliction perpetually. You know, it's like, we couldn't imagine Hyde Park being left derelict. You know, it's a shame to see your county stadium left like that. But I think it was internal wrangling, really. There was problems with the planning permission, there was objections, and then storm and government collapsed. But they're back up and running now, and hopefully all sides will get together and get it done. Like, you know, so.
I suppose the Roscommon equivalent of that would be, you know, what most people would know nowadays as the Loch Pitch, but back then would have been the St. Colman's Park.
That's right.
You know, that would be the equivalent in Roscommon of that, because I'm sure down the years back in Jimmy Murray's time, that would have been the field of dreams for many a supporter and many a great player, and you know, and as you know, as we often said off air, now we used to be, when I was training with the Gaels, playing with the Gaels in my younger days, you know, it would have been it was a lovely. We even had friendly matches on it, but certainly it was always a lovely pitch to train on, and like, I'm sure now I've never actually seen any pictures. And that would be an interesting thing. I must actually look into it, look up images or something on Google or something, and see if there is actually images can be got of St. Colman's pitch when it was back in the day. Wouldn't that be an interesting thing to find out?
It would, Aidan. I'm sure there will be, and maybe we could do a bit of research on it and see what we can find. You know, but I'm sure it would be, and like, Colman's Park was venue to so many fine kind of finals over the years, you know, particularly in the 50s. Leitrim played Galway there, I think, in 58. It was supposed to be a great game. Leitrim came very close to beating Galway. I think they lost by 2 points, but it was in Colman's Park. And Paddy McGarrity of Leitrim was supposed to have ran Galway ragged that day, and it's a shame they didn't win it. Like, in from 57 to 60, Leitrim were probably the second best team in Connacht. They were in the Connacht final for those 4 years in a row, and Galway beat them probably relatively easily in 57, 59 and 60. But in 58, Leitrim had them on the rack for most of the game, and Galway just scraped through with a 2 point victory. And then Dublin only beat Galway by a point or two in the All-Ireland semi-final in 58, and Dublin won the All-Ireland. They beat Derry by 3 or 4 points. And would you believe it, in 1958, Derry sort of came out of nowhere. And they won the Ulster final, and they beat Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. It was like the shock of the century at the time, because Derry had never won an Ulster championship until 1958. And they got to Croke Park, All-Ireland semi-final, and they beat Kerry. Can you imagine that? It's like, let me see. It'd be like Antrim winning the Ulster final next year and beating Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. It'd be just a similar sort of a shock. You know, it was unbelievable. There was a great player called Sean O'Connell. He played for Derry for a long number of years. He played in 58, and he also played right until the 70s, 75 and 76, when Derry won the Ulster final. But it'd be nice to find out about the Colman's Park, get some photographs. And
Maybe if there's listeners out there that would have any pictures, they could email Sport, they could email Rossport on rossfm@aol.com. But we'll also do our own research, as you said, Ray, because that is something special. Like my grandfather would have been Lord of Mercy, and my mum's dad now would have been he would have been around in those days as well, and I'm sure many a match he would have went to there as well. So I'm sure, like, even some listeners that are listening to this now would have, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that would have fond memories. And indeed, look, there's been many fond memories and some bad memories, I suppose, in Dr. Hyde Park as well, between minor and under 21 and seniors and different things. It's nice to compare the two things, because not that much would be known by our generation about what it would have been like back in those days. So it would be just another interesting thing to find out.
It would, Aidan, and Comans Park surface is probably the nicest surface in Ireland during the summer. It's just a pity Comans Park wouldn't have been a great place for developing into a stadium, like in terms of a Hyde Park, Aidan. Like, Hyde Park's an incredible stadium. You wouldn't have had the space down in Comans Park to develop, or the land wouldn't allow you either with the flooding. You know, it wouldn't have been, it was a good decision by the people in Roscommon, who the powers that be, to go and build that. But I think Hyde Park is a fantastic stadium. It's just a brilliant stadium. Yeah. There's great parking around it. There's good access routes in and out of it. You know, there's so many. Well, Roscommon's an ideal town for matches, Aidan, because there's roads going everywhere out of it. You know what I mean? You can go out to Strokes, you can go to Athlone, you can go to Galway, you can go to Castlereagh Road. You know, there's so many outlets, arteries out of it. You know, it's a great, yeah. You can park anywhere. And then, you know, it's been a great stadium. Like, you talked there about the good days in Hyde Park, and, you know, 2001 was a great day, 1990, 91, winning all those kind of finals, 1978 winning All-Ireland under 21, brilliant day. But you talk about the disappointments. I heard in 1971, one of the first years Hyde Park was open, Sligo came up and beat Roscommon in the first round of the championship in Hyde Park. You know, disappointing.
What year actually did the Hyde, what year actually was the first match at the Hyde?
I think it was 71, Aidan. But again, it'd be something if any of the listeners knows to email us and let us know. But I think it was 71. But my father says it was 71. Sligo, back by Mickey Cairns and those great Barnes, Murphy, they come up and beat Roscommon by a few points in the first round of the championship. But yeah. I was just looking there, Aidan. I was talking about Cavan and Ulster championships. Ulster, Cavan has 39 Ulster championships. Next is Monaghan and Tyrone with 16 each. Armagh have 14, Down have 12, Donegal have 10, Antrim have 9, Derry have 7, and Fermanagh have none. Now, Fermanagh lost six finals. But Cavan, Aidan, look at this for a statistic. Between 1931 and 1955, I know I mentioned it a minute ago, between 1931 and 55, that's 26 Ulster finals, right? Cavan won 20 out of that 26. Wasn't that something?
Wow.
We talk about the Dubs today winning 10 in a row in Leinster, or 10 out of 15, or sorry, 14 out of 15. The Cavan had won 20 out of 25 from 1931 to 55. Like, that's
excellent.
That's unreal. Like, so, like, the pedigree in Cavan, like the tradition that they have, like, they're 23 Ulster championships ahead of Monaghan in the pecking order. So, like, that, they're going to be ahead in the charts in Ulster for a long, long time to come, you know. It's amazing. And Aidan, like, Cavan, you think about Cavan, it's a similar type of county to Ireland, a rural-based county, hard-working people move away to college and work in Dublin especially. And like Roscommon, it has a rich tradition in Gaelic football and supporters who are absolutely fanatical about the game and passionate, which is, it's beautiful to see, you know, it's lovely to see it, you know, that Roscommon is such a passionate county for Gaelic football, and Cavan's the same, and it's brilliant to see it, you know. But I'd love to see Cavan back up at the top table, Roscommon, you know, Antrim, teams like that, because I think, you know, the game needs variety, and you see the same teams now every year, Dublin, Kerry, you know, the Tyrones, these teams, Donegal even, like, you know, people get fed up with them, and the GAA, I think, in the Gaelic football side of things, they need a new team coming forward every so often, and we're not getting that in the recent years.
I mean, we've seen that, I suppose, from a league point of view, we've seen that a resurgence of Longford and Leitrim doing well in the league, but for some reason it doesn't transfer when it comes to championship. It's just that for some reason the league form can't doesn't transfer into the championship, which is sad as well. Because it would make the provincial championships a bit more competitive. Like, I mean, in Leinster, with Longford, of course, the last number of years it's been all Dublin. And you know, I suppose in Connacht then for the last couple of years it's been between ourselves and between Roscommon and Galway, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be like if the likes of Longford and Leinster and Roscommon and Leitrim in Connacht kind of brought that extra edge to both provincial championships, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing?
Here's a thought for you, Aidan. How about Leitrim and Longford amalgamating and playing in the Connacht Championship? Let them play in the Connacht Championship.
That's it. You know, they'd have seen it. Because, I mean, you know, back at even a couple of years ago, you remember Paul Barden and,
yeah. You
know, they had some serious players. And then when you throw into the mix all the excellent players now from around Longford and different counties that would have went to St. Mel's, like you went there yourself. You know, so, and that's kind of one of the big colleges known for producing top class players. Wouldn't it be, you know, the resources are there, like the same as like we're in Galway, you know, St. Gerard's, as you know, and Roscommon CBS, you know, all these colleges have produced some serious footballers that went on and played county level. So wouldn't that be wonderful to see that happening as well?
Well, I think so, Aidan. I think the way the GA, look, in the GA terms at the moment, it's like the rich are getting richer, you know, the disparity between the top teams and the bottom teams. It's like the Premier League in England now, the Norwiches against the Liverpools and these teams, it's like, it's not a competition really. You know, in terms of the resources, the fan base, the money involved, and like the English Premier League will be, unless something seismic happens, it'll be Liverpool, United, City, Spurs, Chelsea and Arsenal for years and years to come, you know, unless something radical happens. And in the GAA, Dublin and Kerry and a couple of more teams will always be there at the top. But the Leitrims and Longfords, really, let's face it, they're not going to figure. And I think maybe it'd be nice if the GAA if start to reimagine things that could help give their fans or give the players themselves a chance to get to the top table.
When you look at the players they have the talent. Mm. It's just that something is missing that, you know, would help them get into that bracket, you know, today.
I think Aidan, Leitrim, Longford is such a small population base in both counties. Like Leitrim has about 30,000, Longford might have 40. You know, like we have only 60, and like we're punching above our weight, Aidan. Like we're being competitive with the top teams all the time. You know, Roscommon, and punching above our weight, and Roscommon players management deserve great credit because, as do you remember, a few weeks ago we said no team since 1982 has won an All Ireland with a population of less than 100,000. And it's gone to the stage now where no team has been in a final with a population of less than 100,000. Like, Mayo have a population of 150 or 160. It's nearly three times Roscommon. Similarly, in Galway, Donegal, you know, they all have big, big populations. And we have 63 or 64,000. If we had doubled that population, given the fan base and the enthusiasm we have for football, we would be thereabouts in, you know, regularly. Like we'd be, like Kerry have about 150, 160,000 people, rural county, with fanatical for football. And, you know, it's every generation that a great crop of players come through in Roscommon. You know, we could be lucky to have 15 top players come through, but give the players great credit. At the end of the day, it's 15 against 15 and they punch above their weight nearly all the time and they give great enjoyment to Roscommon fans and we're very proud of them, particularly last year. What they achieved last year was a credit to themselves, the management, the way they beat Mayo, they beat Galway, beat Cork in the Super H, which was a great victory down in Cork, were competitive against Tyrone and competitive against Dublin. So like they deserve great credit. But I think, Aidan, for the GAA to grow as a competition for everybody, I think we have to look at reimagining the situation and maybe say to Leitrim and Longford, look at lads, here's your record over the last 40 years. It doesn't bear for happy reading.
Yeah.
Give them the option to amalgamate every year or every year to play maybe 1 year, maybe 3 years in the Leinster Championship and 3 years then the Connacht Championship. Let them decide. But I think Leitrim and Longford should have the choice to amalgamate and play in the Connacht Championship. And I think, Aidan, myself, that if Longford and Leitrim were joined up, I think they could be winning the Connacht Championship. I really
because between the two there, between the two counties, I mean, they do have quality players. Like I know, look, Paul Barden has retired, if I'm not mistaken. I think he has retired from Intercounty. Yes. So wouldn't that have been wonderful a couple of years ago now for him to have, even back, you know, even having a medal, like a league medal or, you know, a championship level, you know, in the Leinster Championship, and even, you know, the likes of obviously Declan Darcy that played for, he captained Leitrim to, you know, in the early 90s as well. So, you know, but not too many Leitrim people or not too many Longford or Leitrim players have medals. Of course, they're hard won as well. But, you know, wouldn't it be great to see, as you said there, an amalgamation of them, or, you know, because they do have some excellent players. I mean, that can be born when you see their both teams' league performances. You know, they've won promotion in the last two or three years, both teams and that. So, you know, it'd be just nice to see them getting rewarded.
Well, I think, Aidan, I think if Leitrim and Longford, because Longford and Leitrim are very, you know, they're very closely associated with each other. You know, I know they're in different provinces, but they're the same diocese, you know, Ard and Clonmacnoise, and the bonds between Leitrim and Longford would be very strong. You know, they're very close together. And I think that, myself personally, just take that example. I would love to see Leitrim and Longford amalgamated as for the county championship, and I'd like to see them playing in the Connacht championship. And at the same time, I wouldn't like to see them playing the Connacht championship because I think they'd be very good. I think they would beat Roscommon and beat Mayo. They could beat Galway. I think they'd be a very dangerous team, Aidan. You know, I think. But you mentioned Paul Barden there. Like in the 90s and early 2000s, Paul Barden, we talked a few weeks ago about the unfairness of the All-Star system. Like, we got no All-Star last year, which was a joke. You know, it's a question now of nobody knows who the All-Stars are going to be until the All-Ireland final is over, and they'll pick the best 12 or 13 players off the All-Ireland final and maybe one or two.
And really, to be considered for an All-Star, you'd want to get into the All-Ireland semi-final slash final, really.
Well, it makes a joke of the whole system, Aidan, because the league should be taken into consideration. Because and as well as that, the All-Stars should be relative, you know, it should be weighted. If you're playing outstandingly well for Leitrim and you play three championship matches and you're brilliant in the three championship matches and you're brilliant in the league, you know, you should be in line for an All-Star, because in your tournament and against the opposition that you were against, you were brilliant. This thing of the All-Star system for me, Aidan, sums up everything that's wrong. It's a microcosm of everything that's wrong about the GAA as we have it at the moment in the county system. It favours the big boys. It neglects and discriminates against the small boys. And it's the big shots every year. Whoever's in the final, the winners will have six or seven, and the runners-up will have four or five. And then they'll have a tokenism from maybe somebody who plays well in the Super 8s or the Ulster Champions or whatever. And then the likes of Roscommon winning the Connacht final, beating Mayo, beating Galway, away from home, and not even one person. I think it beggars belief.
Nominated, but there was never, none of the three.
Connor Cox, for example, well entitled to an All-Star. Niall Daly, well entitled to an All-Star. Top players, really, really good. Neglected. But it sums up the way the GAA has gone, and what's wrong about the GAA can be, you look at the All-Star system, and everything that's wrong about the GAA is there in the All-Star system. Whoever's in the final, you know, the big boys.
It's kind of elitist in many ways.
It is, but the GAA is elitist in itself, because for a start, Aidan, it's a totally unfair system, because you look at the way the clubs or the county teams are, the competitions are configured. It's configured on a county basis. And like, if you've got a team with a million and a half to pick from and a team with 25,000 to pick from in the same competition, like it's a totally unequal system. It's a totally, you know, it's all geared towards the big teams, the big money, the big populations, to be successful year in, year out. And that's why I think we need to reimagine the GAA from here on in. Like, give Leitrim and Longford the opportunity to amalgamate, to play in the Connacht Championship, And at least them, if they won the Connacht Championship, it gives them boys a chance to play in the Super 8s and to test themselves against the Dublins, the, you know, the Kerrys, and just mix it up. Because, let's face it, the statistics don't lie. Leitrim have won two Connacht Championships since 1927. They've only been in a handful of finals. Sligo, similarly. Longford have won one Leinster Championship in 1968. They were in the final in 65. And after that, they were never in a final since that. So,
like, but I mean, what they could do is do what they do with the hurling. You know, the way there's like an all-star team, right? The main winners are like Galway's and Kilkenny's and Waterford's and Limerick's and all that. But then they also like have, I don't know what you put it, like a B all-star team. You know, for the likes of Roscommon, Kildare and all that. Maybe if they did that in Roscommon, then. You know, the people from, the players from the likes of Leitrim, Sligo and all those Longfords and all that, Louds and all that, they have a chance of winning an All-Star. But it would be the same as winning an overall, getting onto a, you know, the actual, you know, in like they would in the hurling, you know, where it's Kilkenny's and all that. Some of them wouldn't make that type, but, you know, it wouldn't be the same as that. Sure, it wouldn't.
No, but Aidan, if you look at the, take the Oscar nominations, for example, you could have a low-budget film from, say, made in Latvia as a best foreign film in the Oscars. And if you've got a great international film, low budget, and the acting is amazing in it, or even an American film or British film, low budget, but a great story, great acting, and they're in line for an Oscar Best Actor award, with the guys who's in the big blockbuster movies. You know, because they perform well in that film, which is low budget, and there might be new actors, but it could be an amazing film. They're not discriminated against because they're not in a film where there's Steven Spielberg with maybe $200 million or $300 million budget, with big special effects and action moves and all that sort of stuff. And I think what the Oscars do is they treat the quality of the acting in the context of the film and that person is in, and they look at how good that person was. And I think the Leitrims and the Longfords, if they're in Division 3 of the league and they play very well within that league structure, and then they play well in the Championship, even if they're up against Antrim, Roscommon and maybe somebody else in the qualifiers, they should be in line for an All-Star if they are up to high level of performance in regard to their standard and regard to the standard.
Regardless of what county.
Exactly, Aidan. So like this idea of rewarding the Dublins and the Kerrys and these guys, do you think a Dublin guy getting his seventh All-Star is going to be, you know, celebrating that in the same way a guy from Leitrim would celebrate an All-Star, or Wicklow, or Fermanagh? If any of those counties won an All-Star, it would be treated like an All-Ireland. You know, it would be such an amazing award for their county. And I think everything that's wrong about the GAA, in my opinion, can be summed up by looking at the All-Star system and the awards in the All-Star system. It's a totally discriminatory award system. Favours the big boys who are already getting the benefits of playing all the big matches, getting all the benefits that go with that, and then they're getting these All-Stars along with their All-Ireland medals that they might have, you know, what's getting your sixth or seventh All-Star going to mean? I think they should be awarding All-Stars to people who are playing very well within their own, within their own, you know, category. And at the moment in GAA, in county system, like, we have heavyweight boxers fighting against flyweights and bantamweights. And it's the heavyweights are getting, not alone are the heavyweights fighting against the bantamweights, but the heavyweights are getting the awards and the All-Stars for doing that. Like, of course, why wouldn't they get the All-Star? Because they're heavyweights. But the smaller teams that are, and with players that's playing well, and for a long time we were in that category. We've come out of that in recent times. We've been very, very good in Connacht. Like, you know, we should have won. We've won two. We could have won four Connacht finals. Yeah. We're up now, and our star is rising. Like, we're up in the Super 8s category, but we were in 2010, for example, relegated to Division 4. Aidan, you know, down that time we were up against Antrim and Wicklow and Wexford in Division 4. Like, we were hitting rock bottom. It wasn't that long ago. So I just think, for me, start with the All-Star system. Start and review that. let's start recognising the talent and the performances of players on lesser teams, give them a bit of credit, give them a bit of acknowledgement. Paul Bard is a perfect example. I'm not far from Paul Bard and I live in Roosky. He was from Newton Forbes, just in the road. I used to go to Longford matches regularly, Aidan, in the Championship in the early 2000s and late 90s. Paul Barden was a Rolls Royce footballer. He was a tremendous player and he was certainly entitled to All-Stars. Like, for example, they might have beaten Westmead in the first round or Louth or Wexford and he would have been out of this world in that game and he wouldn't even be mentioned sometimes for an All-Star award. So I think they need to review the All-Stars and I wouldn't agree with a B All-Star award. I think an All-Star award should be given to the player.
On merit.
Yeah, merit, yeah. Within the category or within the, if you like, the confines of the tournament and the competition that player had in the year.
Because, I mean, as well as that, like, I mean, when you look at it, and fair play to anyone that does win an All-Star, like, they're not easily won, but it does seem to be, like, it's only teams that get to the last four that are considered for All-Stars, whereas I think if it was fair, like you just said there, if league matches and championship matches were taken into consideration, it would make it a lot fairer, you know, because I mean that the players would be reviewed in more matches which would give them more of a chance of getting into the All-Star team, you know. So that would be a great thing, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, because if you could play your first match of the season in the All-Ireland final and get, you know, score maybe a goal and 5 or 6 points, you're going to get an All-Star for one match, you know.
Yeah.
Like, this is the All-Star team from 2019. Cluxton and goals. Stephen Cluxton, Michael Fitzsimons, Ronan McNamee, Tom O'Sullivan, Paddy Durkin, Brian Howard, Jack McCaffrey, Brian Fenton, David Moran, Paul Mannion, Sean O'Shea, Michael Murphy, David Clifford, and Colin McShane. So you have two from Tyrone, you have six or seven from Dublin, four from Kerry, and one from Mayo. You know, there's the big guns, Eden. You know what I mean? They're all the top teams. Mayo, Dublin, Kerry and Tyrone last year. You know, the four semi-finalists. Mayo played Dublin. And then Kerry won the semi-final as well. And, it just goes to show you that, like, Jack McCaffrey, you know, all those guys have won multiple, some of them have won multiple All-Irelands. So Sean O'Shea, where's the Carlos there? The Carlos a couple of years ago had a great run. You know, they beat Kildare and the great run. Like, some of those guys should have been entitled. Like, there was a guy called Sean O'Brien. Was it Sean O'Brien playing for Carlo? It was O'Brien anyway. I think it was Sean O'Brien. I don't know if it was Sean O'Brien, the rugby player. But, like, he was phenomenal. You know, he wouldn't have been in the running for an All-Star, but why not? Why shouldn't he be? He should be in the running for an All-Star. So here we have the All-Star Awards going to the top star players from the top teams. You know, like, for example, if that was the Premier League this year, it'd be the All-Stars we pick from Liverpool and City. And, like, you could have, take, for example, Nick Pope plays in goals for Burnley. He wouldn't get a look in. He's got probably the best record of a goalkeeper in England in terms of clean sheets. Burnley are probably sixth or seventh from bottom or seven from bottom. But, like, in the Irish All-Star system, he wouldn't get a look in. It'd be the top teams. So, like, it's, in my opinion, all those guys I've mentioned there, brilliant footballers. Of course they deserve All-Stars. They were tremendous. But, look at the teams they're playing with. Look at the resources behind them. Look at the chances they have to be at the top table all the time. But, like, the player for the lesser county who plays tremendously well year in, year out is getting totally overlooked, and I think that's wrong. And I think this shouldn't be a B All-Stars, even though, because that's like the consolation prize, isn't it? It's like the Oscars. You could have a low budget film in a foreign country, but a great actor and a great movie with a low budget, and it could be
the same as getting an overall All-Star, like, you could get a B All-Star.
I don't think it should. So that's where it's at, you know. So Aidan, look at it. We move on to the 2010 final.
Yeah, I suppose really before we do that, have you got the starting teams for Roscommon and Sligo for the 47 final?
Well, I've got the Roscommon team. A few of the Sligo players, Tom Dunleavy, Brendan Wickham was the goalkeeper. And Brendan Wickham, I think, had a tremendous game. You know, he made three saves in the first half that if he didn't do that, it would have been a total whitewash. Like, he was fantastic. Brendan Wickham and Tom Dunleavy was centre back, and there's a guy called Frank White. Frank White played in the centre half forward position for Sligo. He scored a goal from the penalty to make it a goal apiece. So, but the Roscommon team, G. Dolan, D. Boyd, J. Catherley, B. Jackson, B. Lynch, Bill Carless, T. Collins, M. Culhane, Mick Culhane, Eamon Boland, Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, Donald Keenan, J.J. Fallon, Jack McQuillan and J.J. Nerney, John Nerney. And the goals, Roscommon goals, were scored by Jack McQuillan and John Nerney. And Frank White got the goal for Sligo. 2-12 to 1-8 Aidan on the 20th of July 1947 in a rain and windswept Ballina, James Stevens Park. Roscommon beat Sligo by 2-12 to 1-8.
Very good. So moving on to the 2010, of course. Fergie's first year in charge of the seniors, and what a start to the senior ranks for him, winning the Connacht title in 2010. And of course we've always spoken here about the type of man he is and the type how we can get the best out of players. But I suppose he had a great crop of players that year, hadn't he?
Well, he had, and you know, Aidan, I think the Roscommon players deserve great credit because they epitomised Roscommon tradition of punching above your weight. It was the whole was greater than the sum of its parts, because Sligo probably on paper had a better team. You know, they beaten Galway after replay. They beat Sligo Mayo. So Sligo were going into that game as 4-1 on favourites. You know, they had like beaten Galway Mayo to go into the Connacht final. You know, it was a serious piece of work done by them. And they had Eamon O'Hara, Sean Davey, you know, they had David Kelly, was a great footballer at the time, you know, he was a great corner forward, and he had a great chance of a goal in the second half, and Geoffrey Claffey made a save, brilliant save, and the papers talk about it being the turning point. But I would say Roscommon have had better teams that didn't win Connacht championships than that team. You know, it was a hard working team, and it goes to show that the collective unit, that the whole can be greater than the sum of its parts. And it was a clear example of the underdog winning a final. And myself have spoken about underdogs winning finals in the past. And the game was in Castlebar on the 18th of July 2010, coming up to 10 years now. And of course, the headline of the paper was Rossi's Rise and Shine. And that was a reference to Donny Shine's.
What a game he had. That's when he really announced himself at senior level, wasn't it? Of course, he has been playing really well for Clan over the years, but I think that was his shining moment, really, with that day down in Castlebar, because he was impeccable at free taking that day, wasn't he?
Well, he was brilliant for the minor team in 06, and he copper fastened his place and secured his place in Roscommon folklore as a legend on that occasion. He scored 10 points in that match. He scored 6 from frees, 145, and 3 from play. And of course, we'll all remember that great point he scored at the end to win it from a free way out on the left hand side, you know. And Donny Shine was peerless. But it goes back to the, you know, we've spoken as well before about the importance of a quality free taker. They're worth their weight in gold. They can carry a team. It's like a rugby team. If a rugby team's kicker has an off day, generally, they're in trouble. Same with Gaelic football. Somebody who can punish a team who commit a lot of fouls in scorable positions from frees. And Donny Shine did that day in Castlebar to score 10 points in
under
total.
Pressure.
It was unbelievable. Like, in 14 points to 13, as I said, 4-1 outsiders. Donny Shine, tremendous. It was 10 points to 6 at half time in favour of Roscommon. Roscommon had the wind. Kevin Walsh was the Sligo manager. Sligo started very sluggish in the game, by all accounts. Roscommon were a bit like the under 21 team in 78. They were tenacious, they were tigress, they fought for everything. Carol Mannion and Michael Finneran did very, very well at midfield, and we give them great credit. There a couple of last week, I think we spoke with Michael Finneran, and of course Carol Mannion was on our team of the last 25 years at midfield. So Carol Mannion and Mick Finneran were tremendous, and it meant that the Sligo midfielders, Stephen Gilmartin and Tony Taylor, were both taken off in. And then to bring Eamon O'Hara. Eamon O'Hara that year was coming on to 35 years of age. He was 35 later that year. So he started at half forward, and they had to bring him out to midfield early in the game because of the dominance of the Roscommon midfield. And also, the Roscommon half forward line of David Keenan, Cathal Craig and David O'Gara were brilliant in terms of mopping up breaking ball or loose ball around the middle. You know, so Shine got 6 points in the first half. and made it 10-6. So Hara went to midfield, and then Sligo came back into it in the second half, Aidan, and would you believe they got 4 points in a row, and Sligo levelled it up, you know, and Roscommon looked like they were going to fade because Sligo had the breeze, and Sligo had beaten Roscommon by 4 points, 7 points in the league just a few months before that, and Roscommon had got relegated to Division 4. So, like, Roscommon were coming from a very low ebb, and Fergal O'Donnell really, you know, he rallied his troops, he trained them very, very well, he put the belief into them, and Roscommon pulled off a tremendous victory. And Johnny Giles always talks about it and how a year is a long time in football. And just a year before that, in Castlebar, in Fergal's first year as Roscommon manager, Roscommon got absolutely annihilated by Mayo in the first round of the Connacht Championship. I think it could have been 4-15 to 10 points. It was just a tremendous hammering. And we were thinking to ourselves, the noughties had been a very bad decade for us. You know, after the 0-1 Connacht final, apart from the 0-3 campaign where we got to, you know, the quarter-finals. You remember with Frankie Dolan scoring all that? That proved to be...
Because I suppose really in 2001, that was the year that we would have said, oh, now that, you know, we're going to have... The good times are here. Like, we kind of thought with the players that we had that year that we could push on and win more after that, but it just didn't turn out that way.
Well, 0-1 and 0-3 proved to be false dawns, you know, unfortunately for us, because we lost a lot of quality players at the time. You know, we lost, you know, Paul Noon didn't play an awful lot after 0-1, unfortunately. We lost Frankie Dolan, Frankie Graham, Nigel Dineen. A lot of really good players. John Hanley didn't play after that. You know, Roscommon lost players that they needed very badly, you know, in the noughties. Yeah. A lot of experience. Like Seamus O'Neill struggled with a bit of injury as well. I know Seamus played for a long time, but Seamus was brilliant for us, you know. And in the noughties, from 0-3 really up to about 0-10, those 7 years, Aidan, were... seven very, very difficult years as a Roscommon supporter. You know, we'd, like in 03, we got to the quarter final. In 04, lost the Connacht final, to Mayo. Then 05, lost to Galway, or Mayo rather, and then lost to Louth in the qualifiers. Remember up in Drogheda? 06, lost to I think in 06, we got hammered by Meath in the qualifiers. I can't remember if it was a Galway or Mayo that beat us that year. 07, Sligo beat us in the first round of the championship. Cathal Craig scored a great goal. We were in a winning position in 07, and we got hammered in the second half by Sligo, and they won the kind of final. But I remember Cathal Craig scored an amazing goal that day, in off the crossbar at the graveyard end. And then we lost the qualifiers to Kildare up in the Hyde. I was at that match. Could have won it, but 08 then we got beaten by Galway. Mixer Ryan was the manager for a short time. And then the qualifiers, we lost that as well, in 08. 09, we got hammered by Mayo in Castlebar. And I'm trying to think who beat us in the qualifiers. I can't just think of it off the top of my head, Aidan, but we didn't really go anywhere in 2009 either. But 2010 sort of sparked a revival for Roscommon, you know, and Fergal O'Donnell was the chief architect of that. Won the game eventually by 14 points to 13. Seanie McDermott had a really good game in the backs, Mark and David Kelly. Geoffrey Claffey from Castlery made an outstanding save from David Kelly on the 55th minute. David Kelly, he was from Tubbercurry. He was one of the best footballers in the country in his position at the time, at corner forward. Yeah. He was a really, really good player, like David Kelly was. You know, Mayo man Alan Costello was to the fore for Sligo. He scored 6 points. He was a really good player. He transferred from Mayo, and he played well for them. Of course, Eamon O'Hara. Then they had the old guard, like Noel Maguire was there as well, you know, and he was in the backs. Johnny Davey. You know, Sligo had some very good players. They had beaten Galway, beaten Mayo, and then they were managed by Kevin Welch, and then Roscommon just ambushed them in McHale Park. Again, another Mayo venue for the game. The only two Connacht Championship finals ever between Roscommon and Sligo. Both played in Mayo, Ballina and Castlebar, so Roscommon won that game. And that was probably our first win in Castlebar in any match since 1986, you know, when we beat Mayo in that famous game in Castlebar. So, Roscommon got the breaks, got the breaking ball and scraps around the middle of the field, and Roscommon's tenacity was credited to them, you know, and especially the half-forward line, O'Gara, Keenan and Craig, they're winning the ball, the breaking ball. And it turned out to be a great day for Roscommon. They won 14-13, heading in the end, and Donny Shine was the man that kicked the vital scores for Roscommon that day. And the team was... In goals, Geoffrey Claffey, Castlery, Seanie McDermott, Western Gales, was right cornerback. The fullback and captain was Peter Domnigan, of course, was on the minor team in 06. Left fullback was Stephen Ormsby from St. Foyles, and he was on the minor team in 06 as well. And Stephen didn't play an awful lot after that, but he was very good that year. Right half back was Cathal Dineen from Tulsk, or from, played for Castlereagh. I think he plays with the Scammon Gaels now, Aidan, your team.
Yeah, he's up there as well.
Yeah, Nigel's brother.
He's his own team in town now as well, doesn't
he? Yeah, fair play to him. He had a good game. And he was the brother of Nigel's. Centre half back was Sean Purcell from Boyle. And left half back was David Casey from Boyle, and David Aidan had a tremendous game that day. He went forward at every opportunity and he had a brilliant game, David Casey. I think he got a point as well, but he was fantastic. Then David Casey played in the 03 team as well. He was full back with Tommy Carr's team in that great campaign in 03. Then the midfield was Michael Finner and Carol Mannion. Michael Finner and St. Dominic's.
Great midfield.
Brilliant,
great
yeah.
midfield combination.
Yeah, very hard working. Two very honest players. That was a very honest team, that team, you know.
That was a tall midfield as well, really, wasn't it? Because Carol Mannion is no small man.
No.
But when you think of Michael Finner from St. Dominic's, a huge presence in midfield as well, wasn't he?
Brilliant, yeah. And we spoke with Michael last week. You know, when Roscommon needed, like in the barren times, from 05 to 10, 11, in the barren years that Roscommon had, Michael Finneran soldiered for Roscommon year in, year out. And he was very consistent. He gave everything in every match, and he deserved, and I'm delighted he won his Connacht Championship in 2010. He epitomised everything that was good about Roscommon, Michael Finner did. Honesty of effort, commitment, dedication, and gave it all, you know. And he was there in 2010. He was still there in 2015. He came on in the last game of John Evans's era against Fermanagh, I think, down in Enniskillen, if I'm not mistaken. He came on as a substitute. That was his last sort of year for Roscommon. So Carol Mannion was the midfielder. Then David Keenan from St. Barry's was right half forward. He was on the minor team in 06. Another man from the 06 team was David O'Gara, brilliant player, strong as an ox, centre forward, Roscommon Gaels. And then Cathal Craig, left half forward from Western Gaels. Right full forward, John Rogers from Strokestown. Full forward, Donny Shine from Clannagael. And then left full forward, Gerard Heenahan from Castlereagh. Then subs that came on was Kevin Higgins, came on from Western Gaels. Colm Garvey from Kilmore came on. Jonathan Dunning came on from Clannagael for David O'Gara. Of course, Jonathan Dunning was on the Roscommon squad in 2001 when Roscommon won the Connacht Championship. So Jonathan he's two Connacht Championships. Fair play to Jonathan. He was a link to the 2001 team. And he was a good servant to Roscommon as well. And then Paul Garvey from Kilmore, he came on for Cathal Dineen late on. So, and that's about it. Like, Roscommon won 2010, and I suppose we couldn't really let the occasion go by reminiscing about the late great Dermot Earley, 10 years.
That's right, yeah. It's his anniversary
this year,
now. What a
yesterday,
player.
Yeah. Dermot Earley won the when people think about Roscommon football, Dermot Earley is the first thing that comes to mind. For you talk about somebody from Malinhead to Mizzenhead, and you mentioned Roscommon football, and 9 times out of 10 it'll be Dermot Earley. And lovely man.
They're on about naming the roundabout there at Casey's. They're on about naming that after him. Wouldn't that be a nice tribute as well?
Definitely. And I just had a chat with my dad here last night, Aidan, and we were just talking about that. And he made a point which I thought was a fair point. He said that Casey's roundabout is such a famous roundabout now in Roscommon that everybody knows Casey's roundabout so well that it might be a shame to change Casey's roundabout. But that to name the roundabout on the closest roundabout sort of to the Castlereagh side over on the other roundabout coming in on the Circular Road which would have been the nearest one to Dermot's area of Roscommon, to name
that's
that one.
That's another point.
You know,
because
Casey's roundabout, and I was for naming Casey's roundabout after Dermot, but he made a point, I thought it was a good point, that Casey's roundabout is so well established now that it would be a pity, because it'll always be Casey's roundabout. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I think the reason they were saying about Casey's roundabout is because it was the nearest one to the Hyde, and
from that point of view.
But I see where your dad has come from as well, in fairness.
Yeah, and people that wouldn't be interested in football would know it as Casey's roundabout, you know?
It's just
Casey's roundabout for so long that I think it'll find it hard to change it from being Casey's roundabout, you know, even though it's the Dermot Earley roundabout. Whereas there's a few roundabouts in the town, and definitely, like, there should be a street named after Dermot Earley. You know what I mean? That's what I would say. But,
yeah.
but, um, the, 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 uh, the roundabout out towards, is it Walsh's Shop out that country? Do you know?
That's right. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a nice roundabout to call him after, Dermot Early?
That's it, yeah.
You know, because that's the first one on the racecourse road there, you know?
Yeah, and it's nice to have a tribute to do something like that at the 10th anniversary of his passing. And of course, he had an all-star winning son, of course, Dermot Jr. as well, that star had many a great game for Kildare as well. But what a player, and you know, but what a man as well he was. I never had the honour of meeting him now, but I think there was pictures of Donny Shine being presented with a county medal by Dermot Early, little things like that. But you go a long way before you find anyone saying bad about him as a player and as a man. But I suppose being a soldier as well, you know, in the Defence Forces and that will be what a leader. Yeah. He was as well.
But I think the greatest tribute we can make to Dermot Early is that he was a gentleman, Aidan. You know, he played football in the right way. He encouraged people to play football in the right way. He was a sportsman. He was so respectful of everybody. He was a leader. He was somebody people look up to. I'm sure any of the players that played for Roscommon must have been such a privilege to play with Dermot Early on that team, you know. And he deserved an All-Ireland medal. There's no question. He was one of the greatest footballers of all time. I was fortunate that he trained us in 1992 in the minor. He took a couple of training sessions for us which was lovely, you know what I mean. And even as a kid, I remember he came down to Rooski one night and to give a training session. And in all the matches we played in the minor that year, I remember before the kind of final in 92 in the minor, we were in Briefy House outside Castlebar, and he gave us a speech before the game, and he says, lads, you're all nervous now. And we said, we were. He says, look, that's very, very good. You need to be nervous. I'd be worried if you're not nervous. You got to be nervous because that's so important of pre-match build-up.
It's how you channel that nervous.
Yeah, and he told us to go out and enjoy the game, enjoy the occasion, and just to give it everything. I remember we gave it everything, and we won Aidan by a point. You know, we were up against a very strong Mayo team. They'd beaten us by 20 points in the league, but on that one day, the whole was greater than the sum of its parts. But I remember we got back to Briefy House after the game, and I can remember Dermot Early giving us another speech. And do you know something, Aidan? The joy that he had for us winning. I can just see him still. He had the joy that was in him. Like, it was an emotional occasion. Like, you know, they came in and we were sitting down for our meal and he was with us. And he made a speech, and he was so happy. You know what I mean? Of all the 92 celebrations after winning the Conor Minor final, which was brilliant, we were all happy and all our mentors were happy. But I'd say Dermot Early was the happiest man connected with the team. He was the happiest man. And, like, it was just unreal. You know what I mean? The care he had for us he wasn't a selector or anything, but he was, Dole O'Brien had brought him in as an advisor, you know? And he did the same before the game at Crow Park. So it was a privilege to know him, or briefly, like, I didn't know him as a person, really. I just had an acquaintance of him when he was involved with the minor team in 92. And looking back on it, it was great. And he presented us with the medals then later on that year as well. So Lord have mercy to him, Aidan. One of the great men of Roscommon of all time. You know, and he's 10 years gone now this week, yesterday, or the 23rd of June is his 10th anniversary, you know. So Lord have mercy to him early.
What a legend.
Yeah.
But I suppose really there's two things we kind of have to mention before we wind up. And one will be, I suppose, to extend our sympathies, of course, as we know, Garda Colm Hawken was killed in action there last week, in his line of duty. Tough time for his family, tough time for the Garda force, and of course his relatives and close friends. But, you know, we heard a lot over the last week how highly thought of he was as a person, but also as a guard. And of course, he achieved a lot in football as well, playing for Charlestown. And also, he represented Mayo in at under 21 level. So a great man, a great guard, as I say. And you know, but a good leader as well, you know, and very highly thought of. So I just thought it'd be nice to kind of remember him in this show as well. I know, you know, a great GA man as well. I suppose it's something that we wouldn't have known about him until it was mentioned in the last, you know, over the, in the last week that he played for Charistown.
Yeah, Aidan, and you know something, last Thursday when the news came through that Colin was killed, and I didn't know the man, but yeah. I'm sure like everybody in Roscommon, Mayo, the country, I think we were all devastated. I think there was a darkness hung over the whole country last Thursday, waking up to that a great man, a great servant of the state, of people, he served the people, and he gave his life in service of us, you know, the state, and all the tributes that have been paid to him. I don't know him, I didn't know him, but like his dad, and you know, he was watching the racing with his dad before he went out on duty, and he was a great footballer, played for Mayo, as you said, in 21 with Charlestown. They won the Connacht Club Championship back in, I think, 2002, and he was a great footballer for many, many years with Charlestown. And just listening to the tributes and the esteem in which he was held in Castlereagh and in Roscommon, Balladreen, all that area, you know, like Dermot Airlie, what shone through was just his goodness and his kindness and his passion for life and for sport and for helping people, you know, and the GAA, like, you know, and Colm Harkin was like, you know, he's like so many people out there serving the communities. They put their life at risk for us, Aidan, every day. And it's just so sad that what happened, that he had to, you know, and this act was, I was just totally devastated. And even now, thinking about it, I'm devastated for his family. And, you know, he gave his life for us. And, you know, what more can we say? That just may the Lord have mercy on his soul. And I hope that, you know, that he will never be forgotten. Colm Harkin, you know, he gave his life for the people serving us, and I think we can pay no greater tribute than remember him and his service and what he did. And it's such a sad occasion for everybody in Roscommon and Mayo, and I think it's a sad occasion for the whole country that Colm had to die last week. Now, while I say that, Aidan, I was fortunate to play on the minor team with one of the best players I came across in the minor, was Gordon Morley. And like, we're coming up now to the 40th anniversary of his dad's death, the late great John Morley from Mayo, again in the Castlereagh area over in Loch Linn. I think he died with his colleague Henry Byrne. So like, we remember.
They have a tournament every year as well in Balladreen. It is a semi final and final. Four or five teams take part in it every year. I know I was on a couple of the Roscommon Gael squads that took part in it a few times, and in memory of a great man.
And I think, Aidan, I think the best thing we can say about, like, John Morley, Henry Byrne, Colm Harkin, Dermot Airlie, all GAA servants, brilliant servants to the GAA, servants to their community, leaders, servants to the people, serve the people, Aidan, and their country. They all served their country, and they all, you know, died young. And I think we will come June, July time of every year, I think we'll always, for as long as, you know, football has been played in GAA, it'll be played, and even outside, away from the GAA, people will always be remembering at this time of the year Dermot Airlie, Colm Harkin, Henry Byrne, and John Morley.
It brings it back about them as well, and it makes it sad time. Yeah. But of course, you know, with that too, we look back at the great memories that those people would have, those guys, great GAA people, I'd say, it would be the best way of describing them. You know, all the memories they would have given us on the field, and I suppose, you know, they kind of live, that they're still alive in that sense, aren't they? For the memories, once you're always thinking about them and you have them memories, then they're not really gone. You know,
I don't think so, Aidan. I think they'll all, those men will always be front and centre in all of our minds, particularly anytime I go to Castlereagh, or, you know, you go to football with Roscommon and Mayo, who you always think of those people, you know, and they were great great, just great people, great, you know, just fundamentally great human beings, number one. And that's all you can ask for is, outside of their service to the state or whatever, they were, by all accounts, wonderful, wonderful people. And that's the greatest tribute we can pay to them. They were great people. They served, they served us, they served the state, you know, and as I said, come this time, they will never be forgotten. And particularly this time of the year, and particularly the summertime, we will always remember Dermot Airlie, Colm Horgan, Henry Byrne, and John Morley. And, you know,
the rest of peace.
Absolutely. And
And I suppose really the other thing that we have to mention is, you probably saw it in the papers, but even before it was printed in the papers, was Conor Cox transferring to Iroquois. That's a great, you know, I suppose it makes life easier for him as regards reduce the amount of travelling. But what a player for the club to get, for Iroquois to get, and I'm sure He'll have many a good memory with Iroquois, you know, in the years to come. A great player to get.
Unbelievable. Like, it's like, Iroquois are getting the best footballer in Roscommon. You know, they're getting the best player on the county team last year. It's a phenomenal coup for Iroquois, and all we can do is wish him the best of luck, Aidan, and welcome to club football in Roscommon. And, you know, it's fair play to him. He moved back to his father's club. He could easily, I suppose, have, you know, maybe lived in Roscommon Town or in, you know, Athlone or someplace around Bridges or Clannagale to play senior championship. But he chose to play for his father's club, and you have to admire him for that, and wish him the very best of luck with Iroquois.
And of course, we look forward to seeing him playing in the Roscommon Shirt later on in the late season.
I hope that we have him for many, many years, you know, and if there's any other class footballers in Kerry or any of the county whose mum or dad come from Roscommon, we might have a look at them as well. It'd be great to get another one of them, you know. But we can't. We can't be too greedy. But no, look, we're so happy to have Conor Cox. It's what a sign in Aidan for Roscommon. Wasn't it some sign? Yeah. Like, you know, like last year he transformed the forward line, and I think this isn't to deflect or to take away from the other players, but I think most, if you like, objective-minded Roscommon fans would agree that we wouldn't have won the Connacht Championship without him last year. I don't think anyone.
Oh, he scored some of the points.
Yeah.
Some of the points he scored were sublime. Some out near the wing that you'd think, he's going to be something else. And he just popped them over as if it was nearly like he was doing it in his sleep. Yeah, you know, he
Aidan, coming back to it, like, if Conor Cox got the All-Star instead of Paul Mannion, I don't think anybody would complain in the country. You know, I don't think anybody would have said, hang on, how did he get an All-Star? And I don't think Paul Mannion would have lost it in his sleep over it. I don't think the Dubs would have been up in arms over it. You know, it's,
yeah.
I suppose it made me point now about the All-Star system, but I just got going again when I heard about Conor Cox. But no, best of luck to Conor Cox, Aidan, and wish him the best of luck this year, and hope best of luck to Roscommon and all their games, you know, and best of luck to all the players coming back training now and you know, getting ready for the championship in the clubs, which is great to see it, you know, the Mondays, you know, the whole thing is opening up again for players to go back contact training, so it's great, Aidan.
Yeah, looking forward to it now, myself as well. We're starting back, you know, soon, and of course, you know, with the championship starting the end of July, you wouldn't find, you know, training will be starting, and you know, before we know it, it'll be championship time, and then it'll be sort of hell for leather then when it starts. But you know, it's something to look forward to now, and you know, it gives us a focus and things like that, and well, something to look forward to, and hopefully things will go well this season.
Absolutely, and yeah, and hopefully, like, we'll get back to some sort of normality in football, and look forward to the club championships, and then look forward to following Roscommon later on the year, and hopefully it'll be a good year. So that's about it, you know.
Still plenty to look forward to. Listen, thanks very much, Ray, and we'll be back again next week. So we'll any ideas what game we might cover next week?
Well, we might maybe look at the Roscommon Mayo final of 2001, Aidan.
That'll be another one. That'll be a great game to cover. You know, it was a highlight of the noughties, was that particular game, that and the 2003 season as well. So we look forward to discussing that as well next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. And that was Ray Lennon, former Roscommon goalkeeper, and we're doing Roscommon GA memories.